I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and this week I'm joined by Tyler Patrick from the Krypton Report. What's up, Tyler?
Hey, man. Haven't seen you since that time we were in Smallville listening to some Lifehouse. So.
That's right. You know, you mentioned Lifehouse. To completely jump to the very end of this episode, we're talking about Void this week. And was it just me, or did they run out of the music budget? Because
I think they ran out of the music budget, but one thing that we'll talk in this episode, and so I watched the episode usually twice, but with this one, when I did my second viewing, I brought my wife in, who has a keen eye, and I have some of her comments in my notes here. As an editor, I will point out the last four scenes of this show are completely in the wrong order.
You've heard me say on the podcast before, I'm like, you know, I always feel like I could switch this scene or that scene.
Yes.
And I felt that here as well. And then also just the last scene in this episode, and I know this is completely jumping to the end here before we even started talking, but since you brought up the music, it felt like a deleted scene. You know,
yes.
Because they have deleted scenes on the DVDs, you watch them, there's usually little gnat sound or almost no gnat sound, just the onset audio, the actors talking, no ADR, and then also, there's no music. There's no, I'm not just saying popular music, I'm saying there's no Mark Snow music, there's nothing, and that's how the last scene of this episode felt.
Yes.
It was just a deleted scene they put in there.
From the, like, I know we're skipping ahead, but from the moment Clark wakes up, the rest of the episode is out of order.
Oh, yes, good, yes, okay, good. I'm looking forward to talking about this, because I also have a note, you know, where he rushes home to talk to his mom, but he's wearing different clothes. But yes, we will break this episode down, as you know
we'll
that
get
we
there.
Do. So in Smallville, the official companion, Season 5 by Craig Brin, available wherever books are sold, writer of the episode, Holly Harold, talks about the inspiration behind or the thinking behind this episode. Quote, Lana has always felt the loss of her parents. If you'd lost your parents at such a young age, if you'd never had what so many of your friends had, especially in a town like Smallville, she has always felt that very, very heavily, but she has really been a brave, strong person and pushed through it until the loss of Clark. After that, she thought, what have I got to lose? I think her latching onto that was a really natural evolution of the character. And that part was really fun, too, for her to sort of face that and then emerge stronger in the end and realize that that wasn't going to be an answer, that she could push through that and accept life, not only accept it, but also face what it has to throw at her, because, you know, there's going to be loss. So that was the thinking behind having Lana basically become a drug addict. That is the analogy they were using here. Also, flatliners.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's what I was going to say. You mean they just weren't like, we could do flatliners on Smallville?
So yes, the movie plot is an episode, absolutely. Already, get that off the table. But also using like drug addict kind of visual language as well. You know, mm-hmm. how the characters look, their desperation, that kind of thing. So there was a lot going on here they mixed together for this episode. And I don't know if I necessarily buy the logic of what Holly Harold is saying, like, because, yes, Clark broke up with Lana in a very stupid way. Do not agree with the way he went about that at all. I mean, yeah, that's crushing. You have a relationship that ends like that, or ends, period, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe give it a couple episodes to breathe before we just episode opens and Lana's a drug addict, right? I mean, what's your thinking on their approach with this episode, Tyler?
Well, one thing, I feel like the logic, like you said, it's not exactly there. But one thing I did like is a lot of times I think Lana's written annoyingly. And it's nothing against Kristen or anything. It's just sometimes they write the character and her motivations and everything to where it could kind of come off like, ugh. Like I told you before, there was a point where my brother just started singing the theme song of Somebody Save Lana. I don't feel that in this episode with her. You know, maybe not the logic for how she got here, but what she's dealing with, I don't feel like she's really annoying. She's someone who's actually suffering and trying to find love and connection because, you know, at this point, her aunt is gone. Her biological father is come and gone. So she really doesn't have any like...
But are they gone, though? I mean, they're still around. They're just not on this show.
You never hear like a line ever like of Henry Smalls or Aunt
Well, Henry Small never mentioned again. Okay. I mean, he has gone to the great beyond with Lucas Luther and all these forgotten characters, right?
Exactly.
They could have easily given us some line of dialogue about those characters, right? Like where they go. They're hugely important characters in season two when they bring these characters in and then not a word about them.
Season 8, 9, or 10 would have been great for Lucas to just be referenced again. Because of other things that happen, but
exactly like there's a void in the no pun intended, but there's a void at the top of Luther Corp. Who could move in and take over? I don't know, maybe Lucas Luther, but Aunt Nell, they actually referenced in the last episode that Lana like spent the night at Aunt Nell's house, right? Because she was upset about how things went with Clark. So why don't you just? I understand that they have stories that they want to tell, but you have to factor in the fact that these people have families and parents. Chloe, her dad, gone, right? Never to be spoken of again. Gone was actually his last episode, so no pun intended there either. My head is just full of Smallville episode titles. But it's like, yeah, she has a dad. We had this whole thing with Chloe and her mom, right, just a couple episodes ago. Where is her dad in all this?
He's got his job back. That's what he needed to be at the plant, and he's good.
I just think it's not too much to ask to say, hey, guys, could you just take into account the fact that these people have families and... You're just ignoring the fact of the roles these people would play. So, that said, yes, to your point, yeah, Lana's aunt has moved off with a new husband somewhere. Her biological dad's wife doesn't want him to do anything with her anymore. So, you know, those are kind of closed off. But she has Chloe. She has, I mean, you'd think she has other friends, other, you know. This is an extreme, desperate act to fall in with this crowd.
I kind of wish they had built, I mean, as, you know, Smallville hasn't done before, like they've done better in this, you know, planting little things. I kind of wish this had been built up a little bit more. Like, you know, if a show had done this now, we maybe would have met this or heard about this a few episodes back. You would have seen more conflict between Lana and like everyone around her and built up to this. And it would have been more like a couple episode arc than a one and done.
The Arrowverse, when they had Laurel kind of spiral into alcoholism. That's what I'm thinking. Something like that.
Yes, exactly.
You could have Lana like talking about or thinking about her parents more, right? Just any kind of setup for this. Because this is an extreme shift of character for her to behave this way.
And, you know, this isn't the first or last episode where something like this happens, like this huge arc. It, you know, I've been reading some Silver Age, Golden Age comics and stuff. And a lot of the Smallville stuff does feel a little Silver Age-y. Where it's just, you have an, all of a sudden you have an issue. It's just like, boom, here's this big thing. We solve it in one, not mentioned again.
All that being said, let's jump into the void.
Chloe, I got your message. What happened?
Lex died.
What?
Don't worry. I brought him back to life. But he said Lana's about to take a one-way cruise down the River Styx if we don't find her soon.
Chloe, what's happened?
Okay, you want the short story? Lana and her new friends have been taking daily trips to the Great Beyond. They're using a meteor rock cocktail to prolong their near-death experience. But if we don't find her in time, she may never come back from her next little jaunt.
So they're killing themselves and coming back to life?
Yeah.
Why would Lana do something so dangerous?
Because she's hurting, Clark. I mean, she won't talk to you, she hasn't talked to me, so maybe she's looking for comfort from the two people who care about her most. You know, the two people she knows love her unconditionally.
Her parents.
Yes.
Void is the 17th episode of Smallville's 5th season. It aired on April 6th, 2006. It was written by Holly Harold and directed by Jeno Swark.
Woohoo! Yeah.
And as always, I mentioned Jeno Swark, director of Supergirl, the movie, director of Jaws 2, director of many Smallville episodes.
But so, you forgot the big one, man. Santa Claus the movie.
Santa Claus the movie. Yes. Another one actually is Somewhere in Time, which I also mentioned as well. It's a very lovely film about a romance across the ages with Smallville guest stars Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour. Of course, both known best for their guest appearances on Smallville. So.
Yeah, it's all connected. It's all connected. Okay.
And then Holly Harold is an executive producer and writer in the Arrowverse. She is on Batwoman and wrote the Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2 episode.
Which can be argued as the best episode of Crisis.
I don't think there's any argument there. I think you go 2, 3, 1, huge gap, and 4 or 5 are kind of tied because they came out the same night, so it's hard to judge them separately.
Yeah.
I guess I would put 4 over 5, I think, maybe. I don't know. Just because the ending was so underwhelming.
Yeah. 4 was like, here's the big, all this like confusion stuff of being in the Speed Force. We're just kind of doing little things to waste time to build up. Okay, fight scene. We win, but not really. Here's episode 5.
And then there's only one Earth, and then all the other Earths come back. This is not Crisis on Infinite Earths hour, but as people... as people come on the podcast, you know, as post, we're in a post-crisis world now, Tyler. It is fun to talk for a few minutes about what you thought of that. So how do you feel about how they ended Smallville there?
You know, at first I was a little disheartening just because, and this is the argument, it wasn't about him in the suit. It wasn't about like him standing up and fighting. It was me kind of talking to my wife, like, I understand his journey on Smallville, but it's like, if you have those powers and once you bring those into the light, and then you give them up, is the world still protected from such threats? Like, all of a sudden, people are depending on you, you know? And it's like, can you give up that responsibility that you've presented to the world that I'm here? And I'm like, and we her and I kind of talked, I'm like, I don't know if that's a Superman thing. She's like, but I get it in this context. I'm like, yeah, I do too. But it didn't sit with me at first. But then, you know, giving some time, I understood it. And I was like, okay. Because then I was thinking, you know, kind of like whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
Even, exactly.
Even the story Secret Identity, where Clark Kent was like a human in a world and then he got power.
Oh, I love that story. Yeah, I love that. It's like a total Elseworlds, but I love it.
Yeah, and because they had the two daughters in that story. You know, it's one of those things like, I see what they're doing. That's fine. And then I try to wrap my head now with that ending does Season 11 canonized, like, but you know, I was never really champing. I never expected him to wear the suit and come flying out and save the day. Cause in all, it's not his show. It's not his series, you know, knowing just the background stuff, like none of the guest stars really had parts to play.
Yeah. That's other than Red and Ralph as Superman, but think about it. He's already on, he's a main character.
He's already on Legend. Adam.
So I don't know, like, when you say Crisis on Infinite Earths, I expected a handful of heroes from across the multiverse to come together to fight the Anti-Monitor and save the universe, right? But everything was all segmented. It's like, oh, here's Brandon Routh, Superman over here, and then he got switched out for Lex Luthor. John West's ship Flash was in his own place with what he did on the treadmill there, in the cannon, and as the Flash did in the comic books, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. There's no, like, nobody else came together. Almost all the Paragons were from our universes and the shows that we know. So
exactly.
That was disappointing. Like, I thought the cool like part of a crossover is you put everybody together who does not always together, and they solve a problem together.
I mean, the only other Earths that they used was Supergirl's Earth, which was technically a different Earth, and then, you know, Earth One. So basically, all the Paragons were, like you said, they were from the two universes. Like, they didn't shift and have anybody else from an alternate Earth, like the Earth Two Bartholomew or something crazy like that, you know, like,
yeah, even the other Earths they had access to, they just ignored them all. I'm not even saying like go get someone from Smallville or Lois and Clark or anything, although they should have, just saying use the multiverse to your advantage. That's the point of this crossover.
Or even because, you know, when they had the mega major battle, it would have been cool to see like multiple Superman, multiple Flashes all fighting together. I mean, one of the highlights for me in the crossover was Black Lightning showing up, because I the show is good, but I love Jefferson's character. Like, I'm a fan of Cress Williams' portrayal. I love Jefferson, like the character. So when he showed up and just him and Barry together, I'm like, that's the show I want to see.
Yeah, no, I love Black Lightning. Definitely Well, I guess now that Arrow's over, it's my favorite show in the, the Arrowverse. So, yeah, no, totally, man. So there's your Crisis minute or 10 minutes or whatever that was. But yes, Holly Hall wrote the best episode of Crisis on Infinite Earths. But the episode you wrote for Smallville we're talking about today, not one of Smallville's best, but hey, let's get into it. It starts out, Lana is a druggie, and I mean, even the makeup on her, like the eye circles under her eyes, right? Just the visual language there. We're at Metropolis University. She's laying in her dorm room, surrounded by books of like afterlife and things like that. Then under the cover of night, sneaks to this the cafeteria or something.
It looks like the cafeteria, but it's supposed to be like the med student area.
Yeah, there was a sign that said cafeteria, and it must have been some back room somewhere. And so these you know, as in Flatliners, these college kids are experimenting with, you know, life after death. And there's no explanation of, like, were these people from Smallville or what? There's two characters, Lance and Allie. Now, Allie might look familiar to Smallville watchers because she's played by Michaela Mann, who also played the character Lisa in Forever.
The CW makes Canada feel really small. Even on Supernatural, there's been times they've brought back actors in later seasons to be different characters that they were. And at one point, I had a theory that it was something else, and I won't divulge that. But then I'm like, okay, I'm not a fan of this. I don't like when you bring back actors in a different character. I mean, at least get the actor's twin to be the other character.
You know? Well, here's the thing. Like, why didn't they just make her the same character? Like, it would have made no difference. It actually would have enhanced it. Like, oh, yeah, I know you from Smallville. Like, that's how Lana fell in with this group, this other girl who she went to high school with, who we saw in a previous episode. Make her not a Trevor. This is a perfect opportunity to have a not Trevor. Like, oh, that was that girl from that episode. They went to high school together. She fell into some bad stuff in college, and then Lana found out about it through her, and that's just she found this group. The reason they know about the Meteorocks is because they're from Smallville. Like, it makes so much sense if you're just going to cast this actress, and because that character's a blank slate. She was probably like in two scenes.
And then Forever. It makes it even better when Chloe shows up in the dorm room to confront her about worrying about Lana. You're absolutely right.
So, I mean, there's a history there. Anyway, it just makes so much sense. So in my head canon, they are the same person. Much like in Star Trek Voyager and Star Trek The Next Generation, Tom Paris and Nick Locarno are the same person. All you Star Trek fans out there know what I'm talking about. So,
yeah, I just feel like when she got to college, she tried to reinvent herself. New name, went with the goth angle.
Yeah. You know,
that's what it is.
Totally. There it is. We have this. She changed her name, obviously, to Allie. And we have filled in some plot holes on this episode, filled in some backstory. But yeah, it's a really real shady operation. See, we had seen Lana grab a wad of cash before coming down there, and she pays Dr. Lance, or I guess a medical student Lance, $2,000. She's like, yeah, this is the rest of my savings and all that. And I'm like, wow, this guy is running a racket, isn't he, Tyler?
I mean, he is. And then he makes the comment of, this will be my Nobel Prize. For what?
Who are you people? What are you doing? Yeah, what is the motivation?
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked some more backstory. I mean, maybe if there was like more people involved, like a psychology student or like something who was like studying different people's experiences of the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to prove an afterlife or something. Because I'm like, how do you get an award for just killing people and bringing them back to life?
Right. I mean, that is pretty impressive. Like but does the resurrection only work if you had died the certain way from the first serum, right? The green serum and then the gold kryptonite to resuscitate themselves?
I'm not even sure if it was kryptonite because they didn't focus on the second serum.
Right. But I mean, one would stand to reason that if kryptonite
it makes logical sense.
The other, right?
They never bring it near Clark in the episode. So we don't see how he starts to react around it. And they just kind of only show the vial, like, what, twice, maybe?
That is serious headcanon. They're saying gold kryptonite, but it's like green kryptonite is a substance here. There's a gold substance. Where did it come from? Who knows? So why does killing someone with kryptonite have them have a near-death experience?
Right. Right? That's what I'm saying. Like, what's the importance of this syrup? Like, how is it any different than just injecting someone with, like, a drug overdose and then giving them adrenaline to bring them back?
Well, the two things, right? One, this is Smallville. And True. Two, it had to work on Clark in order to get the best scene of the episode. So, you know,
True.
If it wasn't kryptonite, it wouldn't have affected him. Or maybe they could have used, I don't know.
I mean, it's just as simple as there's kryptonite around and Clark falls into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, we have some issues with the lack of setup, backstory, or motivation for any what's going on. Basically, that's in a nutshell. But hey, Lana lays down on this bed. She gets injected with this kryptonite. She says she wants to stay longer this time because she almost found them last time. So she's done this multiple times. I understand why they said that, because they want to present us with a Lana who's like a druggie looking for a next fix, right? That's mm-hmm. how they want to present her. But they also can't show us that she's met her parents before. They want us to see her seeing them for the first time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have to establish that it takes her a while. Although when Clark and Lex die later, they immediately find their parents.
And I have a theory for that. They also establish that Allie quickly notes, like, that's only, what she say, 20 seconds longer than I've done. So we know that we have that person who's a few steps ahead of Lana in the process.
Yeah.
Of what Lana could be here shortly.
A cautionary tale that she turns out to be. But hey, Lana gets the injection and she dies, and then she finds her parents. And they are played by the same people that played them in the pilot. I was very impressed that they talk about returning actors. They, you know, they had just basically glorified extras in the pilot in 2001, right? But they got Ben Oldberg and Wendy Chmielewski back. And those are the people who played Lewis and Laura Lang.
I checked that because I was like, I sat there and I was like, I wondered, because I was like,
I thought there was no way these are the same people, but but they were.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I was shocked.
So I give credit where credit's due. You guys know I love this show, but I also love nitpicking the show to death. But when they do something right like that, they get the details right, applause. You know, just well done, show. There's really nothing really of substance here, because there's really nothing of substance between Lana and her parents, considering they died when she was three. So they don't have like a relationship in the same way that Clark and Jonathan, especially, and even Lex and Lillian have, right?
And that's another reason. That is part of my theory of how they were able to connect to their parents so quickly.
Oh, very good. I understand. I see what you mean. Yeah, because, you know, Jonathan literally just died. And Lex and Lillian, they've already crossed paths in the afterlife before. So,
all right, that was my theory. You finished it. You know, it's because this is Lex's second time with death, right? And meeting his mom. And Clark is, you know, longing for his father and has such a strong emotional tie to his mm-hmm. father. Compared to, like you said, with Lana, who's never, she has more of the child imaginative idea of who and what her parents are mm-hmm. than an actual understanding of who her parents are.
Well, and then she interacts with them and they say, oh, we miss you too, honey. Oh, I miss you so much. And they hug, right? And that's like all there is to it, because there's nothing there. Like, there's nothing to go into, right, to discuss.
There's nothing. Yeah, I mean, it could have been neat if they've said, like, we've watched over you and we've seen, you know, and they start to talk about almost giving this impression that in the afterlife, you know, the spirits of the parents, just much like Lillian talks about the fur knowledge she has of Lex and seeing.
Oh,
him.
yes.
You know, but that's, we're quickly taken away from the Langs.
Yeah. I mean, you do get, this episode does capture that, like, being ripped away too soon from where you want to be very well. That happens to all three of the characters. By the way, plus one for main character death, because Lana died and they brought her back to life. So we have that here. And also, for those keeping score at home, plus one for movie plot as an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Lana, she's ripped back. She's like, oh, no. And she's like, oh, I have to go back. And then we cut door opening credits. We come back. And we are at Metropolis University in the dorm rooms. Chloe and Lana's dorm room. Lana's not there, but Chloe is. And Clark arrives. We have a plus one for blue shirt, red jacket, because that is what Clark is wearing in this scene. And Chloe has summoned him because she has a lead on Professor Milton Fine in Honduras. Clark knocks on the door, right? Which is, you know, out of character, which Chloe even comments on. Usually you just wish in here. And he's like, well, you know, Lana might be here. And so, you know, they're playing that whole don't want to see each other thing. Understandable, because Clark left things in a very horrible place and should not have broken up with Lana the way he did in the last episode. And so things are awkward and uncomfortable around everyone. So we get a lead for Clark's very, very short subplot. This episode where he goes and finds the ship in Honduras as well. So I will take a screenshot, actually, of what Chloe has, because she has a picture of what's going on in Honduras. And we see Milton Fine hiding behind a plant. And it's the most ridiculous thing. Photobombing Brainiac in this picture. So I'll take a screenshot of that so you guys can see. And also, we see Clark's phone number here. Because she messages Clark, we'll take a screenshot of that as well. It's one of those Hollywood 555 numbers, guys, so don't expect an answer when you dial it. But lots of screenshots and interesting tidbits to be had here. And Clark does ask about where Lana is, by the way. She's like, I don't know, she didn't come home last night. And Allie does show up with her eventually, and she's worse for wear.
And what's interesting, the makeup really good, first of all, is on Lana. Is really good, making her look sick, deathly. Mm-hmm. What's cool is, like, she looks rough, but her, like, other than, like, the shock of Clark, her spirits seem high. Because, like, even when Clark leaves and she makes the line about, of course you guys are friends, she seems almost happy. And, you know, that's kind of scary because it's, like, these two sides. Like, you look horrible. Something's up.
So following up on the Honduras tip that Chloe has from her source, we'll find out at the end of the episode who that is. So it's not an unseen connection for those keeping score at home. Okay. Clark goes to Honduras, and we get our same Honduras super in, like, the bottom left corner of the screen that we got in the last episode, Hypnotic, you know? And again, I said it last week, I'll say it this week, the lack of consistency in the location and time supers in Smallville has always been kind of frustrating to me. Like, I would just prefer if they just stuck with their normal font and put it in the bottom center of the screen and just kept it that way. But there's no guideline for Smallville like there was on, like, The Flash or Arrow or something. So all these different fonts, all these different sizes, all these different locations on the screen whenever they decide to do something like this. So anyway, these are things I notice.
As you would, as you're watching the show now for these type of things. You know, now, like, as we watch it, we're watching it for these type of details. Just to see, like, oh, okay, interesting. As we'll talk about when we get to the end of this episode.
Yes, very good, very good.
The one thing is, when he goes to Honduras, I told my wife, is like, he should have been able to speak the language. That was always, like, a Superman type characteristic. It's because of his muscle control and his hearing, he can learn and adapt the language. And that would have been a really cool just part for this episode to see Clark, like, interacting more with the people in Honduras, you know, which I've never been to Honduras, but I always felt like it's a very warm country, you know, and a 6-foot-tall man in a bright red jacket might stick out and have some problems, like, being, you know, hot.
I mean, he communicates with that kid to a point, but not very much. He is walking around with this ridiculous picture of Milton Fye hiding behind a plant, showing it to people. It's funny, a couple of the women there obviously think he's cute or something. Because yes, they kind of laugh when he shows in the picture. But he sees this boy, the same boy we saw Brainiac and Lex with in the last episode, with the spaceship that his father carved. Clark recognizes the shape that he has and must eventually communicate with his kid to the point where he can take him to where the spaceship used to be.
Yeah, like, the Clark subplot is so minor. Like, Clark's role in this episode is minor. You know, there's a great scene that serves a point in this with Clark, but this is not Clark's episode. And in some regards, and we'll get there, Clark's not really the hero of this episode either, but we'll get there.
So we got to Martha, and she is giving a press conference at the Talon about her senatorial duties. The reporter kind of apparently asked her some kind of hardball question about another senator that she needs to talk to, and he's asked a question. She's like, well, if he will ever ask me that in person, I'd be happy to have that conversation. And then the press conference just ends. And as the press kind of disperses, we see Lionel there in the Talon. And has Lionel ever been in the Talon before now?
That is a dang good question.
Because the visual of him in the Talon, like, holding a colorful cup of coffee was just amusing to me. Because I don't think we'd ever seen him there.
Well, I mean, okay, so he's holding a red cup. Because the red's part of the Talon. Martha's in a red suit, and he is in a black suit, white shirt with a black and pink striped tie. You know, so, like, that image of him just period, like, sticking out. Yes. And now that you say that and I'm thinking back, I don't think he's ever been to the Talon before.
Lionel is giving her some advice about dealing with the senators. He's like, here's everything I have on everyone we're going to see at this state dinner tomorrow night. And Lionel's going to go. She's going to be there. It's just, you know, it's not like blackmail or anything. It's just like personal information. He's like, well, did you know that Senator so-and-so is a big fan of polo? And she's like, oh, no, I didn't know that. He's like, yeah, you can't talk shop with these things. You got to, you know, you just got to schmooze with people, right?
Senator something else's daughter's gymnastics. And
yeah,
it kind of takes Martha, I think, back a step, because she's expecting, like, Lionel's like, here's the dirt I have on these people. And he's like, no, this is just general personal information.
Well, that's what you think it's going to be, too. You think it's going to be some, like, dark blackmail or something,
which,
right?
Which is a better long a game for him, because then that allows Martha to kind of drop her guard, bring him in to help her navigate these waters. And this is about bringing Lionel into that trust circle, even though she does make the point next about, like, there can be nothing more between us.
Yeah, she draws a hard line, and I respect Martha for this. So Lionel says, well, we're both going. We should go together. I can help you navigate the waters, as you said. And she's like, sure, but just so we're clear, there can never be anything between us. I hope you're not looking for anything in a personal nature. And, like, there's a second he's like, then he's like, smiles, like, oh, of course, right? But
he's like, I'm going to wear you down, Martha.
The Martha Lionel stuff is fun. It's interesting. It's a subplot a lot of us enjoy, but they have to be very delicate about it. And I think they're walking that fine line very well here.
I agree. And I think Martha makes the better senator than Jonathan ever could have been.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's from that world. You know, she understands and is willing to play the games and all this. Jonathan just, he's too bullheaded for his own good about these. Like, he would never schmooze and play the kind of, you know, corporate games you have to do when you're in these higher level of business and politics, right?
Exactly. Like, as much as Jonathan would be the man that we would want for his honesty, hard working, Martha's really the one that we want because she has those same values, but knows about how to accomplish those things in this world. So I like that with the senator aspect. Something like I always did like about it was just the fact it gave Martha something to do. It also allowed her to be gone for long periods of time and then bring the character back when they needed her without having to really go into, well, where's Martha been? She's not running the Talon. You know, like,
well, if she's never there, you can be like, oh, well, she's off on some senator thing.
Yeah, she's in D.C.
And it gave you a perfect excuse to write her off the show for a couple of years. Again, Smallville running long enough to bring back characters that have been written off, right? You know, like, because don't forget, season 6 is her last season as a regular. And then she's not in season 7 or 8. I mean, there's a couple, like, phone calls with her from people. You know, classic, oh, thanks, Martha, and you hang up, right? But she didn't come back till season 9 and then 10. And then quite significantly in 10, as she should, for being the end of the series. So I'm glad. I mean, I would have loved to have her around the whole time, but I'm glad it played out the way it did, where she could leave and then come back. So
exactly. It was a great plot line to have her depart and be able to work in and out when she needed to. And, you know, just throwing this out there real quick, like, season 5, like you've mentioned before, like, it's the season that it starts to get better because we've broken the almost, like, they're adults now, quote unquote, they're in college, not in college, but they're out of high school. So we can start to accept certain story threads, like the parents don't have to be around as much anymore because we've stepped out of that. So I think it's logical that Martha would start to kind of move away from Clark.
Right. So then we go back to Lana, and she is stalking the halls of Metropolis University and goes into this, and just in the middle of this medical class that Dr. Lance is in, and it's like, Lana, like, I get that you have a, like, they're trying to show, like her need for this fix, right, is too strong, right? And she interrupts, you know, him in the middle of this class. I mean, he's a student in this class, right? This is a room full of people. You know, they're cutting into cadavers. And she's like, hey, I need to go back now. And he's like, whoa, what are you doing? You're going to, like, you know, keep your voice staring and jeopardize this whole thing. It's like, a lot. Could you not have waited after class or something for him? Like, I don't know. But I guess they're just trying to show how desperate she is. But we get our Chekhov saw, I guess, Tyler.
Yep.
Because we see all the surgical equipment and autopsy equipment here in this scene. That will come into play later. And he says, okay, but it's going to cost you $5,000. And she's like, not a problem.
Not a problem. Can we also mention how dark, dingy that classroom is? Like, they're not in the basement of a morgue. Like, they're in a classroom that looks like it was shot on the set of CSI or something. We've seen college. I mean, the Milton Fine classroom, you know, lecture was.
That's the best lecture hall ever.
Exactly. And I'm like, okay, I believe that's college. And then this just looks like the darkest room possible. Like they could have at least lightened it up. I don't know. It just, it doesn't feel like a classroom. It feels like something else.
You think to yourself, where's Lana going to get this $5,000, right?
Ooh, ooh, I know. She's going to go to her friend, but not the way you think.
Yeah, not, it's like Lex, but not in the way you think. Because and this is what really plays up the whole she's a druggie, right? Like she is wearing a hoodie and breaking and entering a friend's home to steal from him. I mean, so Lex comes in and he sees somebody in a hood, like in his office, and he pulls a gun on him. You know, and it's Lana. He's like, my God, Lana, I could have shot you. And he puts we see him put down his car key on the desk and they have a conversation. He's like, Lana, if it was just money, you could have asked. And it's true. You know, she could have asked him for $5,000. He would have easily given it to her. But you know, she's not thinking straight. And they talk about this. She explains that, oh yeah, there's a guy that met you and he's come up with this serum that, you know, you can see your parents in the afterlife, you die. It makes it very clear that she dies and comes back to life, which again, I don't understand what the kryptonite has to do with any of this, as we already discussed. But Lex understands, you know, he's like, hey, look, I get, you know, missing a parent and wanting to reconnect. But you know, this is dangerous stuff, you know? So I this is a good conversation between the two of them, I think. At least finally we get some insight into like her thinking behind all this.
This is a good Lex episode. What I liked about this episode, and I point out to my wife who loves Rosenbaum's Lex, as we all do, he is not a villain. He is not backwards. There's no angles in this episode. He genuinely cares for her and everything he does. Like there's no, oh, this guy's serum. And then, you know, we don't have this scene of like him calling him up. Like, I want to fund you. I want to help, you know, Lex truly is a good guy in this episode.
Yeah. He has no, he's not working the angles like he is a lot in season 5 with Lana. Right, he is genuinely concerned about her well-being, and it's true. And see, they connect on a lot of levels legitimately, right? I mean, they've been outsiders. They feel, I mean, Lex isn't an orphan, but he feels that way because of his relationship with his father, right? So they connect on a lot of levels, and that they're connected again on this level. But you know, she's like, you know, shivering, again, the drug addict thing coming into play, and he's like, I'm gonna go get you like a blanket or a water or something, right?
Wait, hold on. Because this is my favorite part that I had to laugh at. And my wife's like, why are you laughing? He says, I'll go get you a blanket as he walks past the fireplace with a fire in it. There's no like, let's warm you closer to the fire. Like, let me move you closer to the fire and I'll get you a blanket or nothing. Like, it just made me chuckle because I'm like, there's a roaring fire right there. And there's a chair in front of the fireplace.
He leaves his keys, and so Lana, as soon as Lex walks out, Lana's demeanor immediately changes. So we focus in on those car keys that Lex left, and Lana snatches them and runs out. And then we cut to Chloe doing some investigating at Metropolis U, and she had seen all the books, you know, that Lana had been using in the dorm room, and clearly there was some, we never see what it says, but there's some piece of paper which obviously has the information of these people she's been hanging out with. You know, I was waiting for like to be some pamphlet or or something, right?
Come join our group.
Yeah, but we never wouldn't see that. So but she's used this to find Allie, aka Lisa. And it's funny that she was in Forever, because that episode was very House of Wax. And when we go into Allie's dorm room, there's a poster for House of Wax on the wall. So I question if that was like a meta commentary on the actress being about those episodes. So well done, set decorator.
Yeah, I'll say well done, person. Because it could have been like, hey, I'm going to throw this in here and see if you want to pick. Because, you know, in 10 years, 15 years, someone's going to do a podcast about this and maybe they'll catch it.
So how would you describe her room here, Tyler?
Oh my God, it's straight up like early 2000s stereotypical goth room. Like the big poster of Marilyn Manson, all black.
Bought everything in Hot Topic, put it in this one room.
Yes, but you know, this is a good scene of just Chloe, and like, because Chloe makes the line of like, I'm just concerned about my friend. What's going on?
Because Chloe doesn't know what's at all any context with it. She's like, are you guys going out partying, doing drugs? Like, she really doesn't know. And Allie explains to her that, like, what they are doing, looking for, you know, the afterlife, basically.
And she's coughing when Chloe enters. And then, of course, she starts to cough up blood and starts, you know, near-death experience only so many times, meteor rock.
I guess she wasn't going to tell her anything, right? But then when she started dying, she figured she would tell her. So, I mean, that was the vibe that I got.
Yeah, me too. Because as soon as she like starts coughing, her face changes and she says, I don't want to die.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because that's what you've been doing.
What you've been doing, yes.
But the other thing is interesting is Chloe calls 911 and the first thing she says is, I have an emergency. Well, yes, you've called 911.
Please, go on.
Usually, like, I don't know about you, but if I was going to call 911, they say 911, what's your emergency?
What's your emergency? Yes, I have an emergency. By the way, in this conversation, we have a plus one for you weren't yourself because she, Chloe tells Allie that Lana isn't exactly acting like herself.
And this conversation would be what I consider the Bechdel test pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're talking about Lana.
I think she mentioned something about she lost her boyfriend or like, but it's in a, that's not what this conversation is about.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Because this is the only time I think two female characters talk other than the Lana brief exchange to Chloe as she's, you know, the whole, all we're your friends comment. I think other than that, this is the only other time two females are talking together.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's your pass right there. So we have identified it. But unfortunately, Allie passes away from her overuse of this serum, drug, cocktail, whatever you want to call it. There you have it for Allie, a.k.a. Lisa from Forever. And in the, just if people are interested, in the Smallville yearbook from Forever, Lisa was most likely to become a movie star in Smallville High School yearbook. So that was inaccurate.
Rest in peace.
Again, I know we talked about it at length at the beginning, but what a missed opportunity, right? To not make that a character from Smallville High School. So it would like tie everything together, add some context, and make for a some more weight to it.
Exactly. Just Chloe, like this person she kind of just met dying in front of her. I don't know about you, but like after graduation, running into people from high school or even people I went to the same school with that I didn't know, there's like this instant kind of connection bond. Like, like, hey, I just met you, but you graduated before me or after me. Cool.
Oh, totally.
We have something. So it could have been a good, could have been nice. This question also, did this happen during the day? Because it felt like there was some sunlight coming into the room, but it felt like nighttime when Lana was at the mansion, you know?
Was confusing. And then when Clark shows up, it's night.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, but that's about to happen. But yeah, what day is it? What time of day is it? Again, Smallville, right? So from here, we have Lana showing up with Dr. Landseer, and she wants another trip to the afterlife. And he is in the process of like getting rid of everything, destroying all the evidence, right? Because Allie has OD'd, and he doesn't want any of that to trace back to him. And so he's packing up all the tools. She gives him the car keys as payment, right? to have the serum again. He's like, where'd you get that from? She says, I got it from a friend. And then Lex shows up. He's like, oh, and he wants it back.
Thing about expensive cars, they all come with GPS tracking.
Yes, that's such a good Lex line, right?
It is. And it's so true to him. But like at the same time, like, here's this car for payment. Okay, well, now I have to take it somewhere and get a clean VIN number and all this to prove that it's mine. Like, that's not great payment.
Yeah. Like,
here's a stolen car that the person's going to come looking for.
This is a cash-only business, Lana, okay? Yeah, but when Lex does show up, they start him and Lana, they say a couple things to each other, and she says, Lex. And the guy's like, wait, Lex Luthor? I'm like, you don't recognize Lex Luthor? Right?
Exactly.
You live in Metropolis, bro. They start to fight, Lex and Lance here. And during this commotion, Lana sees one of the vials of kryptonite and roll on the floor, so she grabs it and runs away. And Lex gets stabbed in the neck from Lance with the kryptonite serum.
Yeah, he's like, Lex pulls the, you're not going anywhere till the authorities show up.
Yeah.
And he's the guy's just like, ha-cha! And takes him down. Where does Lex show up, Zach?
Well, he dies. So we have a main character death plus one here. And he wakes up and he's in Luther Mansion. He hears a piano and it's his mom. Lonely Luther is back and basically confirms that what we saw in Lexmas really happened. Or is all this in their heads, Tyler?
Oh, it really happened.
Okay. She does reference their previous meeting in Lexmas. She's like, oh, yes, we've crossed paths before. Isn't that after you were shot when you were trying to get dirt on Jonathan Kent so you could beat him in the senatorial race, right? And how that turned out for you.
So. She's playing the piano and mentions a song that she used to play and Lex would watch her as she practiced. You know, it's like you, like we were saying earlier, that Lex has already experienced death and his mother, so he's drawn to her faster, or she's drawn to him.
No, I follow. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So, you know, that's why he's able to just, there she is. They have a stronger emotional connection, even though he lost her when he was young himself. And like you said, she knows that he made the wrong choices of what she tried to show him before.
Yeah, he's like, what was I supposed to do? And she references a couple things that to tie all the way back to the vision of the future that we had in Hourglass Relax. She's like, you're going to be standing in a field of flowers that are dead or something along those lines, right?
Yep.
Of course, that's the visuals we saw in Hourglass where he's smelling the sunflowers and they all wither and die.
Let's hope for there's time to cleanse what's left of your soul from all the blood. And he says, blood? She says, of all the people you're going to murder. And that's when she raises his hand up.
And he has the glove!
And he's like, huh? Huh? He gets pulled out of it in probably one of my favorite lines. Where he wakes up and it's Chloe, and she's holding the syringe, and she's like, well, I figured if the green one killed you, this one brought you back.
And she's like, well, you're already dead.
He looks at her like, what? She's like, you were already dead? Like, what's it going to hurt to try? Lex says to her that Lana was there. And then the next scene, we see Lex being put in an ambulance, and that's when Clark shows up.
Yes, so we have a plus one for hospital visit because Lex is being taken on from the hospital. Even though we're physically not at the hospital yet, everybody, when you're getting put into an ambulance, I count that as a hospital visit because that's where you're going. Okay,
it's a mobile hospital. Good.
Perfect. It's a mobile. I love that. It's a mobile hospital. Very good. Very good, Tyler. So Clark shows up, and this is so Clark from Smallville. He's like, what's going on? Because he has no idea what is happening.
Clark shows up. He's blue jacket, red shirt.
Was he not in that in Honduras?
No, in Honduras, he was red jacket, blue shirt. And when he gets back for this scene, he's blue jacket, red shirt. It's the only time this, him showing up here and then him with Jonathan, he's in the blue, red. And then we get the other shirt change after that.
Huh. Well, by the way, presumably he's been in Honduras and that's why he hasn't been around for any of this. And he just shows up now, right?
Yep.
You're right. You're right. The costume continuity is suspicious. I somehow missed this one, but I did pick up on the next one, the other continuity problem with the costumes, but we'll get there. I did want to say it was really cool when he runs 200s, where we see like that's the longest super run we've seen from him yet. You know, we kind of zoom out on the earth and we zoom back in when he shows up there. That was early in the episode when he first arrived in Honduras. I thought that was pretty cool. So
it was awesome. It was just cool to see him run because I was watching the second time with my kids and someone goes, he can run fast. I'm like, yeah, because he's like, because every other version of Superman, you never see him run ever.
Yeah, he just takes off.
You know, so Solomon's like, oh, cool, he can run fast too. I'm like, yes, buddy, he can.
And then it adds some scope to the world of Smallville to kind of like zoom out and zoom back in and that kind of thing. But yeah, he is presumably showing back up from Honduras unless he went home and changed. The thing is, in this one, Tyler, I can buy that he went home and changed. You know,
I mean,
he was in a foreign country. You know, we go home and take a shower and refresh yourself and all that. I totally get it.
I can too. But it was just something that I noticed like, oh. Okay.
The second wardrobe change, you know, not so much, but we'll get there. So, yeah, he shows up and he says, what's going on? And Chloe's like, Lex died. It's okay, though. I brought him back. So
Clark's just like, wait, what? What did I miss? Kind of like.
Well, yeah, if you just found yourself in the situation, you're like, what is going on? So Chloe kind of catches him up to speed on this stuff. And what Lana's been doing, and, you know, of course, you know, on some level, he's going to blame himself for this. Speaking of Lana, we go to Lana, and she is, I guess she's just another room, another medical room at Metropolis U, because she's trying to get some syringes in order to inject herself with the kryptonite.
Okay, think about this, Zach. What is her plan? She's basically going to commit suicide.
Yeah, because she doesn't have the gold. There's no one else around.
Exactly.
There's no goal to bring her back. So
exactly. And I don't think that's addressed that she was willing to inject herself to see her parents knowing that no one could bring her back.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is dark stuff. I'm not saying that the show shouldn't tackle things like this, but if they are, they need to tackle them
better.
Better, yeah, and across the board, like you can't just pick and choose the parts of near-death experience to talk to loved ones because you're having emotional issues in life, right? Like this is heavy stuff, and it's you're right. That's not even doesn't cross anyone's mind that Lana was like, yeah, she was just gonna kill herself here, and like even her desperation, like trying to get the syringes, she can't open the door, so she breaks the glass. Right, and reaches in there and is so close to just injecting herself with the kryptonite before Lance shows up, right?
Yeah, and he says the line of, I thought I'd find the junkie where the needles were.
I'm like, oh, God's sake. It's, why does he, and we have our Chekhov saw, you know, from earlier, and why doesn't he just let her kill herself?
Right, okay, exactly. This was in my notes. So he gets mad, and then he...
ruined everything!
You ruined everything for me. So then he does it for her, you know, puts it in there, pulls the syringe to what looks like the correct dose that we saw earlier, instead of just like a bunch of it to like really kill her faster, and then goes to give it to her. And Lana fights back. You were going to already do it to yourself. Like now that he's going to give it to you, you're now like, don't want it?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I could get if he come after her with the saw first. Right?
Right, right.
But he came after with the very thing she was going to use first. So, because then I thought, okay, well, he wants to stop her because, like, if someone finds her dead with this kryptonite in her system, maybe they can trace it back to him somehow, right? But yeah. He's going to use that to kill her, so he's incriminating himself. So,
doesn't make sense. What exactly is his plan?
Yeah. So, Clark shows up. To intervene, and he gets stabbed with it in like the heart, right?
Yes, and my son was like, "How did he get stabbed, Dad? He's Superman." I was like, "Remember, it's green kryptonite." He's like, "Oh yeah."
So that alone is what makes the whole "we're using kryptonite to do this" work for the purposes of this episode. But just zooming back for a second, you know how many times we've seen kryptonite be ingested, injected, liquefied, right? Yes. And it doesn't kill you like that. So
there's something more to the serum that they never really divulged in, but it's one of those where kryptonite was the added property that helped boost whatever it was you were doing.
It certainly didn't look like a mixture. It looked like pure liquid kryptonite.
It does. I mean, we do see a scene where he's pouring stuff into a beaker that's just like green liquid from this cup into this beaker for no apparent reason earlier. But yeah, you're right. The whole reason it's kryptonite is so we can do this scene right here.
Which is the best scene of this episode. And I think what people remember best from it is we have Clark gets stabbed. So he dies. So main character death plus one, because Clark died. And he wakes up in the Kent barn, but it's like this purgatory looking Kent barn, right? Where there's like just light everywhere around it. He goes up to the barn doors and he has trouble opening them, but he does open them and it's just white, right? And then out of the white void, no pun intended, walks Jonathan Kent. John Schneider is back. He had died just, let's see, this is the 17th episode, so he had died 5 episodes before. And this is a powerful moment because Clark is getting to, you know, say goodbye to his father again, or see his father again after he had died, because they really had no last words together. Mm-hmm. You know, he had just died. And this is a great scene, Tyler.
Yes, it is. It's, I mean, my wife, like, enjoyed it. It was just like, you know, she even said like, ah, like I'm so glad it's him, you know, because, you know, we watched this episode Eye Contact. She had forgotten at this point in the show that Jonathan had passed, you know, and it wasn't like him seeing his Kryptonian parent or anything. And just, she's like, he's such a great fatherly character, especially in this scene. I feel this is like pure Jonathan Kent. Like, I love his lines of Clark basically trying to, you know, blame himself for his father's death, and Jonathan just saying, I lived a full life that a father or a husband or a father could ever ask for. And he's trying to take this burden from his son. You know, he's trying to communicate, it's not your fault. This happens. And I died doing what I always did, protecting your secret. And then Clark's like, what? My secret. And it just changes from there.
Right. You gotta keep the whole world safe, right? Because Lionel Luther knows your secret, son. And that's the one thing here where like these parents in the afterlife are supposed to be like omniscient, I guess, right? Because Lillian knows Lex's dark future, right? And Jonathan knows Clark's bright future, right? Where he says, you're going to be a symbol for truth, a symbol for justice, right? Which is great stuff. But he's like, Lionel Luther knows your secret, son. You got to keep your mother and the whole world safe. And like, but if you're really omniscient, you know that, like, isn't Lionel, like, he knows that because of Kryptonian stuff, and he's not a villain anymore, I guess, right? What's your take on that, Tyler?
I you know, I think about it. I'm trying to, think back. Like, Jonathan knew that he knew the secret. Okay, so Jonathan knew he knew the secret because that's who he was tussling with when he had his heart attack. Jonathan has always said that his Thelmobia symbol stands for truth and justice. So you could take it that he doesn't know the future. He only knows what's going on now. But even in then, you know, it kind of comes back to that Lionel right now isn't really being evil, or is he? Because, you know, he's still underhanded.
In the context of where you are in the season, it totally works, right? But if you want to zoom out for the bigger picture, like, yeah, I don't, there's enough wiggle room. That's the one thing I'm like, that's like for the purposes of this episode, not necessarily like for the whole story.
I mean, we could argue, is it because that Jonathan hasn't been dead that long? Lillian's been dead for a long time, so she can see a lot.
This is true. You know, there's no rules
with
this.
She can see Lex's entire future. Yeah, exactly. She can see everything that Lex is going to do. And I don't think that Jonathan really sees everything Clark's going to do, because he's saying the same kind of stuff that he said to him his whole life. And then, of course, the Langs have no input at all.
Well, this also reminds me of in The Death of Superman. Superman dies. He sees Jonathan in the afterlife.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At that point in the comics, Jonathan Kent was not dead, right? But he had had a heart attack during The Death of Superman. It was actually a reversal of this, right? Because Superman was dead, and Jonathan had the near-death experience and helped Clark fight through the afterlife. It's an interesting side story in The Death of Superman, but like there were these, what were they? Like some kind of, some evil entities posing as Kryptonians. They were taking Superman to like his Kryptonian afterlife, right? But him and Jonathan fight them off, and that helps him find his way back to life. So anyway, that's definitely what I thought of.
I have that over there on my shelf. yeah, I mean, it is, because it's nice to see it, like you said, the portrayal of it from the reverse. What I like about this is that Clark is kind of like, I want to stay dead. And it is Jonathan who says, you have to go, and he pushes his son back.
Yeah, that's tough. He's like, I cannot do this without you. He's like, you can, son. I know you can. You know, it's like, oh, man, this so much feels, right? This is the show, good or bad. For the episodes, right? It always hits the right marks with these emotional feels about family and fatherhood. And it's a great moment. And you're right. Him having to push him back. He's like, I love you, son. I'll always be with you. Right. It's like, oh man. And then Clark gets ripped away. And it's just such a great emotional moment. It's just so played so perfectly. Well, also I do want to say that this was a great final time to see John Schneider as Jonathan Kent. Right.
Yes. This is the best way for him to go out. For, and I mean, he doesn't reappear until what? Is it season 10 or season 9?
Well, let me stop you right there, Tyler. He appears in Oracle, the penultimate episode of the season, as a shape-shifting Brainiac impersonating.
Okay, yeah,
Jonathan Kent.
That's a bit. We can argue that. You know.
Well, no, I just think like for a long time that was the last time you saw John Schneider as Jonathan Kent on the show, and I was like, man, that's a.
It's that
kind of a bad last taste in your mouth, you know. You know what I'm saying? Like, this would have been much better if this had been it, right? As opposed to that.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually had forgotten that he shifted into Jonathan, because I was just thinking like we had this,
and then season 10 Ghost Dad, yeah,
yeah, and then of course Jonathan on the other side.
Right, right, and this scene, you know, when Clark gets ripped away here, that's echoed on in Kent, the episode in season 10. That's one of my favorite scenes of the whole show, is when he's talking to Jonathan from Earth 2, Smallville's Earth 2. but we'll get there. But man, so many feels. So yeah, this would have been an amazing final time to see Jonathan. And like, as contrived as all the circumstances have been to get us here, it was worth it for this moment, right?
Yes.
When you see, you know, Brainiac impersonate him, that's like, oh, I don't want to leave it on that note, right? We had Jor-El possessed to Lionel Luther, had to kill him. Like, that's not the last time I want to see John Snyder's Jonathan Kent on the show, right? And then we get Ghost Dad in season 10, which has no explanation. It never did. And it's bizarre, especially in the wedding. It's weird. So I would, if I had my, like, okay, what would you do? I would leave it here with Jonathan Kent. I would not have Brainiac impersonating him, because I just didn't like that vibe. And, like, that's the last time Clark sees his dad. is when he's, you know, Brain X and Percy the Enemy has to be destroyed by Jor-El possessed Lionel Luthor, right? I don't like that. And the Ghost Dad, it was a good scene in Lazarus in season 10, but it was like this, just later, and without the conceit of Clark is actually in the afterlife, so it just kind of randomly happens. And then he's Ghost Dad in the series finale, which is bizarre. But I would have kind of left those out, honestly. But I would have kept the Earth 2 stuff with the other Jonathan Kent. I think that's powerful stuff.
I would have kept the Earth 2, and I would have brought him back for the last episode because he's in the fortress, and you can kind of rationale Kryptonian technology.
What does he say? What does he say in the fortress, Tyler? What does he say to Clark?
Always hold on to Smallville.
So there it is. So how can I say I don't want that to happen? And that's the name of my podcast. So I take it back. You're right.
But I think that one has a little bit more of that contrivance where, like, okay, Kryptonian tech, he's in the fortress. Only, you know, he only sees him in the fortress.
Just the weird, honestly, the weirdest part of Ghost Dad was when he's like in a different outfit at the wedding, giving him like the nod of approval. So weird, right?
Yeah, like
doesn't make any sense.
I think that one could have worked if you tweaked it differently, but definitely I think for doing that kind of period, like we talked about with Martha, leaving this as your last, as your goodbye to Jonathan Kent, mm-hmm. and seeing nothing until we got to the last season.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Cause then it's like, oh, he's back. Like there's a much more warmer presence of, oh, he's back there. You know, there he is. It's so great to see him again. Like, and this is working compared to that bitter taste. Like you said, how he's fake Jonathan Kent, but he just wakes up. I guess for some reason he was dead. And once he actually died, the kryptonite, because Chloe has a line that says, oh, I guess when you actually die, the kryptonite neutralizes in your system. So with him actually flatlining dead, the kryptonite then didn't work for him. And then he woke up on himself.
We do need to address the end of Dr. Lance, who,
Okay. So
go ahead. Talk us through this, Tyler.
So Dr. Lance then decides that he injected Clark. Clark's out. And Lana's like, don't hurt him. Dr. Lance then decides that I'm so mad at you that I'm going to murder you with this bone cutting saw. Both of you.
That's going to be established earlier, to be fair.
That makes a huge, it's going to make a huge mess because now you got to clean that up. Got to cover up the dead bodies. That's a whole new level of problems. Why, you know, and you don't have any more of that stuff with you. Like you literally took it all out of the vial. But of course, so he's going to do this. He comes at Lana. She saves herself, which is nice. She takes a beaker, busts it over his head. He falls on top of the saw and just dies. It's a little brutal. It's a little dark of him just laying on the saw going,
So let me ask you this, Tyler. Does this count as a Lana kills?
I would say no because she's self-defense. It's self-defense in an accident.
But a guy died. So did she not kill him?
It's like, is this going to hold up in court kind of Lana kills? I mean,
manslaughter.
But it was self-defense. We're not lawyers. So
We'll see. We'll just think about it for a few minutes, and we'll decide when we get to the tally board.
You know what? I'm gonna say yes.
All right, there we go. We got it. All right, we got it. This is a category I need more points on. Okay, we finally have her kill someone. We're putting it on there
because it is a little like because it's not ever addressed. Like, I mean, if I don't know about you, but even if I had killed someone in self-defense, that's going to have repercussions on me. I'm still going to have an emotional, like...
Well, that's where this category came from. This is in Phoenix, right? In season 3, second episode, she kung fu kicks a guy into some farm equipment and he dies. And it's never addressed ever again. Like, at all. In that episode or beyond. And I know that's self-defense as well, but we counted that. And that's why I'm saying this should count. And I'm glad we are in agreement.
Yes,
and yeah, it makes it worse because it's never even addressed at all. You're absolutely right.
And goodbye, Dr. Lance.
So this is where we start to wrap everything up. Is this the same night or not? This is when we can dive into what you were talking about with everything being out of order. Because I assume this was just that same night.
That's
how everything happened.
Feels. And then if I can like divulge a second and explain what I think the order was.
Okay, let's get to it.
So what it feels like based on this, the next scene should have been Clark and Lana in her dorm room. And then it would have been Lana and Lex. Then it's Clark and Chloe at the planet. Then Clark showing up at his home. Because the daylight transitions as well as the costume changes.
Oh, you're right, because the Lana Clark scene's in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because The way that John, the way it's edited of the look that Clark gives John Glover as Lionel as he's leaving feels like the kind of you would cut off the episode.
Executive producer Alpha Goff and Miles Millar.
Exactly. It has that tension. But I feel like in the editing room, they decided, no, let's end this episode with Clark and Lana. And that's why it felt like you were saying earlier, there's no music. There's no umph. It's just like a fade to black.
It's because it's a scene that would be in the middle of other scenes that are more interesting.
And then that scene is Martha, you know, getting ready to go to that dinner. I don't remember earlier. I forgot to check this the second time. If Lionel says when that dinner is, like tomorrow night. Or yeah, anything like that. I don't remember.
I think it would probably just hurt what we're trying to do. It probably wouldn't help. Probably contradict what we're trying to do here.
So you know, Clark's like, I got to talk to you, Mom. Martha comes down in a red dress.
It's an orange.
It's like an orangish red.
Because I believe Lionel's like, oh, we should always wear that color.
And he's got the smooth line of, next to you, Martha, I'm just a man in rags.
Yeah, this guy, he's slick.
Because she says, you look dashing. And he's like, I'm just a man in rags.
Oh, man, yeah.
And there's that great, because even my wife loves watching Tom Welling act because he with his eyes. My wife is she does a lot of community theater and things as well. She says, you know, the look that Tom in his eyes gives to Lionel in that scene is great because it's so strong of like, kind of like, don't you mess with my mom. I know what you're up to. I'm kind of like stern look.
Well, it's horrible timing too, because he had rushed home to say, Mom, I have something you need to talk about. And she's just coming right downstairs to, and just leaves immediately with Lionel. So he does not get a chance to tell her. And as we find out in the next episode, he still doesn't tell her because he's like, well, she's got a lot on her mind right now. I'm like, come on, Clark, you got to tell her. You basically, I mean, I know Jonathan didn't lay it out. It's basically like Lionel Luther kind of killed my dad. Yeah. Right? I mean, he died.
Unintentionally, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they do address that later on this season, obviously, but like this was a big deal that he was going to tell Martha. You know, it does come up later. So anyway,
and that's why I feel like this feels like this is the end of the episode.
Yeah, that's a beat you want to end on, like down, down, like add some, you know, a nice musical note there to end it, and that is a very sinister ending, like good night, Clark.
Exactly, and that's why, like my wife and I were watching, I was like, we both kind of stopped and was like, okay, so this is the order that it probably was scripted at and shot for. But then in editing, they changed it.
We start wrapping things up. Chloe and Clark are the Daily Planet. And then, you know, they have their dialogue of what we mentioned earlier where Chloe's like, well, it's good to know if you die, the kryptonite burns itself out of your system. And Clark's like, well, it's nothing I intend to do anytime soon. And of course, he'll die many more times on the show. We all know this. And Superman himself.
He tells her about what he saw when he saw his dad. And, you know, he affirms her it wasn't a hallucination. He told me about
yeah, because Chloe's like, well, you sure that wasn't just a... He's like, no, I could feel my dad. It was real.
And he says, Lionel knows my secret. That's when she tells him that Lionel was her source about Fine in Honduras.
Chloe's scene connection.
And, you know, and then, of course, now he knows, okay, that's one more step Lionel's closer to him.
Right, and he thinks they can't figure out, like, what's his game here? And Clark's like, maybe he's playing us all.
Then it's Lana talking to Lex. And she's wearing a maroon jacket-looking thing. And this is kind of Lex. This is what, some, you know, this is kind of that Lexana start right here kind of thing. Going like just kind of sowing that seed a little bit more of them bonding over having dead parents, the experience they had.
The great part about this scene, though, is he's like, yeah, I saw my mom. She's like, oh, what did she say? And he said, she said she's very proud of the man I'm becoming. Just complete lie. Like, he tells her what he wished she would have said and what Lana would want to hear, right? And I think that was having to lie to yourself and to her was great.
Yes. It shows, it kind of shows two things. One, Lex has problems being honest with himself. Two, he does care for Lana and wants to preserve kind of his image to her. But at the same time, like, he doesn't accept the destiny that is he's being pointed to. Because, you know, later on we have the great line in the show where he confesses, I am the villain of this story. He is not to that point yet. He still denies.
Well, he did say that last season.
True.
you're the second. No, you're the second person to say it on last week's episode. Lauren Wynn said that too. She thought it was later. And I get why everybody thinks that, because they play it so often, right? And it seems like something like season 7 Lex would say, right? And every single Smallville montage you'll see, that's in there. But yeah, that was Evil Lex from Onyx back in season 4. But it's funny that multiple people, the podcast back to back, have thought that was later after this.
So. It's been so long since I've watched all of it. Like, you know, and I'm like, maybe he says it again or something. But no, you're right.
But no, to your point, right? He is projecting a certain image. Lana's buying it too. She's like, oh, well, she should be very proud, right? I'm like, oh my God, you guys.
Isn't it kind of that both parents told their child what their destiny is?
Right.
Lillian told Lex what his is going to be, and Jonathan told Clark what his is going to be. And then both of them are kind of, in a sense, still pushing back against that destiny.
Yeah.
To bring the parallels. This is kind of one of those scenes that kind of helps show that, you know, this whole episode shows that Lex has a weak spot for Lana. He genuinely cared about protecting and helping her. And this kind of shows that chemistry of what's to come. And I know a lot of people hated the Lexana stuff. Over the years, like I explained to my wife, because the show breaks canon and continuity and stuff of what Superman, in the confines of this show, I would have liked them to have stayed together longer. Is almost this power couple that comes together against Clark because of how bad Clark has treated them. Like, I think Lana, because she, you know, like having this heartbroken from Clark, you know, in the context of this show, I think Lex and Lana together would have been something great, because it would have, one, really dug at Clark more. Two, it represents like his failure on two fronts for him having to lie. Because then you have Chloe, Pete, who know his secret and the kind of relationships he was able to do with that. And I think, you know, later on down the line, you could have redeemed Lana, but at least like for a good season, maybe two, of like them really against Clark and how that plays on him could have been a really interesting thing to explore.
I thought that myself, and back in the day, I was thinking that as well. Like, if they're going to go there, because I'll get, as we get deeper into Lexana here, I'll get pretty negative about it, because I just do not like where they ended up doing with it.
I don't like how they did it, but the idea of those two coming together, I mean, like, the idea that Lana being like, you're responsible for the death of my parents. Like, you did this to me. Like, it's because of, like, really kind of coming at Clark and all of his fears coming true. I think would have been just a really strong point for the character, especially the way he treats Lana. Like, she is way too forgiving too often for him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, this season, right? And that's what I was thinking in the back of the day. Like, this season was really, we started out with like Clark and Lana were a couple, and right. But as the season 5 progresses, we get Chloe and Clark moving closer together and Lana and Lex moving closer together. And then by the end of the season, you kind of have the two of them on one side and the other two on the other side, right? At the season finale, you have the great kiss at the Daily Planet with the Clark and Chloe, and you have Lana and Lex, in quotation marks, because he's odd, up on the roof of the Luther Corp building. Obviously, they brought in Lois Lane, and that's his own category. I always talk about the Clovis theory, blah, 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 blah. But to your point, I think a possibility, what they could have done, left Lex and Lana together, but because of the previous relationship they all had, even though Lex knows Clark is Superman, he doesn't necessarily attack Clark Kent because of some, like, you know, Lana would never forgive him for that or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there are ways they could do it, but they didn't want to make Lana like a straight up villain. They did the most uninteresting things with Lex and Lana together. Oh, let's have a fake pregnancy. Brilliant. Right. I mean, come on, you know, next episode, we're going to talk about Lex and Lana a lot as well, because that's where it actually like legit officially happens for the first time. I'm not going to let this shadow every single podcast we talk about, but in these early stages, you know, it's a big shift to the show. So obviously we're going to talk a lot about it. Last scene, it's Clark and Lana. They're in the dorm room. Lana says that she's over it now. She's stronger than ever and knows she doesn't need those things. It felt very contrite, right? Like, oh, we have to put this at the end of the episode to let everybody know that Lana is not still struggling with this. Although, again, like we said earlier, if they want to tackle something like this, they should have gone all in with it. Right. And
yes,
had her actually deal with it. And I wasn't like, I didn't love the Laurel arc of her being a alcoholic and like her life kind of falling apart in the second season of Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
But like they follow that through like from start to finish, you know. So I might not have like liked every decision they made along the way, but I respected how they were like addressing her dealing with her grief. Mm-hmm. And that's, if they really want to do something like that with Lana, they should have. But then I guess Lex would have looked like even more of a predator taking advantage of her in that vulnerable state. Because even like in the next episode, Chloe confronts Lex about like, how dare you, you know, take advantage of my friend when she's so vulnerable, right? And if she really was like on the edge like this for more than a few episodes, you see what I'm saying, Tyler?
Yeah. I mean, the Smallville takes little shortcuts in certain character develop certain beats there compared to how things have gotten fleshed out more in modern, you know, like you said, the Arrowverse shows how, like I said, this should have been like a couple episode story arc. We should have seen Lana.
Just two is all I'm asking for.
You know, like, you know, the previous episode, we could have seen her with these books, like seen them in her dorm room, see her reading them. So that when, you know, we get to this episode, we're like, oh, she's taking this to the next level.
Well, it's funny because early season 5 was really good about that.
And
like
they
were like Lana looking at astronomy, talking about the senator, like they were picking up things that they set up earlier. Just was the couple of lines or a shot of something earlier. Right.
And I subscribe to your thought is they had planned, they had plotted that this is going to be that, like, we're going to tie up some stuff. This is going to be a tight end season. And then halfway through, they're like, we're going to get another season. We got to slow things down, change some pace, make some filler. Because, I mean, in most of aspects other than the Jonathan Kent scene, this episode is filler.
Well, this episode reminds me a lot of Hourglass from season 1, right? Everybody remembers it for these great two short scenes, right? From Hourglass, right? It's Lex, President Lex in the field, in the White House, and then Clark in the graveyard, right? And then here you get Lex talking to Moira. I'm rewatching Arrow right now, so I have a Moira Queen. Lex talking to a Lillian, and then Clark talking to Jonathan. And you take these out of the episodes, like, wow, that's some great stuff. But if you look at the episodes surrounding it, like don't get me wrong, the scene between Jonathan and Clark is an A-plus scene, but this mm-hmm. is far from an A-plus episode, as we'll get into when we do our ratings. But yeah, I think this episode's claim to fame is those scenes there, and for good reason. But just so much around is what falls apart, and so like the ending, the resolution, the tying it together with the scene between Clark and Lana just does kind of rings hollow for me.
Yeah, it does, because it doesn't feel like this isn't what you write to end an episode, but it's like they decided to end it with Clark and Lana.
Like, look, they're gonna be okay, because Clark says, "I just want you to be happy, Lana." She's like, "I will be." And we're like, "Okay, I guess we're supposed to feel fine about everything now. Can we not address the fact that you wanted to kill yourself like 12 hours ago?"
How much better of like you end on "I will be," and then it cuts to her going to talk to Lex, and then we have that scene, and it just kind of plays out the emotion of sowing those seeds, like, "Oh, I will be," because like I said, my favorite part to this episode is the fact that Lex is a good person. Like, he's not Lex. Other than lying about what his mom said to him, he didn't try to play an angle. He didn't try to, like, it's not his doing. This wasn't some Luther Court funded thing that went off the rails. Like,
right.
He was absent of it. And he genuinely was trying to help Lana with her situation. So it's a very good episode to show Lex. That's why the ending just kind of is.
Although in this scene, we do see Lana looking at a picture of her and her parents. And she also has a picture of herself sitting on her desk, which was odd. Did you notice that?
I don't have any pictures of myself unless I'm like with somebody. Like
a
just looking around
picture
my
of yourself.
Like, oh yeah. So speaking of framed pictures, I didn't bring this up real quick. Since last time we talked, I have met Tom, Michael, and Laura.
Oh yes, that's your Twitter background picture, right?
Yep, I actually have a framed picture of that on my desk. So that. I met the Smallville cast. So yeah, that's framed. It's not just me. It's my family meeting them. So, and I have a framed picture of me meeting Dean Cain too. So, I mean, once again, not just me framed. Like,
I have the picture of me and Tom and Michael at the first convention that Tom was at. And I have that framed sitting next to my Smallville DVD sets. So on my shelf. So totally.
Completely makes sense. It's not just you by yourself.
That's something you see like in a comedy. Like, it's something like Michael Scott would have a framed picture of himself on his desk or something.
Right.
It's
just like... Exactly. It's something that like shows vanity and humor in the person. I mean, Lana thinks highly of herself that she's like,
maybe that was Chloe's desk. Maybe Chloe has a framed picture of Lana on her desk. but okay, last thing we got to say here. I have to mention this. If they wanted to give Lana and her parents something to talk about, why not talk about the fact that, hey, Dad, you're not my dad? Right?
I didn't even think about that till right
I'm
now.
I'm sure neither did they. I'm sure the writers of Smallville didn't think about that. Did he know that he wasn't her dad?
Hey, Dad, I know you're in the afterlife stuck with Mom forever. You want to hear something? Mic drop. You're not my real dad. Talk about that. Lana out.
We talked this whole time. We're like, Langs have nothing to contribute. That's a huge thing. So they're not going to go there. Now's not the time to discuss that either. But it's like, that's kind of a big deal that her dad is not her dad. So just saying.
You can't stay here, son. You've got to keep your mother safe. You've got to keep the whole world safe.
No, Dad.
Clark.
Not without you. Dad, I need you. I cannot do this without you.
Yes, you can. This is your destiny, son. You are going to touch the lives of so many people. Not just as a man, but as a symbol. You're a symbol of peace. You're a symbol of justice. And now it's time for you to go.
No, no!
I'll always be with you, son.
Clark!
Always.
Void got a 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave a 3 out of 5. So, Tyler, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Void?
I give it a C+. And I lean into it because, and like the two scenes we talked about, they elevate the material, but I like the positive portrayal of Lex. It carries a lot of weight for me because it just helps show that Lex isn't too far gone yet. And the other thing is about it that I enjoy is Lana. I actually felt like Lana, she made sense in this episode. Like I had said at the beginning, I didn't find her actions annoying. How we built to this, it would have made better, but I could understand her and her actions in this episode a little bit more than being the poor me Lana that we've seen before.
We are in 100% alignment. I also give it a C+. I was going back and forth. Like I was like B-, C+. I'm like, no, everything, like I was saying earlier, like the structure of that these two great scenes hang on is just so weak. You know, but again, the Smallville with the feels, that's what's going to give you that plus. You know, that Jonathan Clark scene is great. You know, like we're saying, they do things over and over again. Shades of this exist even in the Earth 2 Jonathan scene all the way down in season 10. So, yeah, I mean, this episode will it'll be remembered best for those, and everything else is kind of best left forgotten. I'm sure they could have found some other mechanism to have people have near-death experiences, right? But I think it ultimately came down to, well, we got to have Clark do it. I guess we'll have Kryptonite. That was probably it. So there you go. So C+ for you, C+ for me. Let's move on to the tally board. We have a +1 for a blue shirt, red jacket, which Clark wears. That brings us to 34. We have a +1 for hospital visit because we see Lex loaded up in a ambulance, as you called it, a mobile hospital. So that brings us to 82. We have a +1 for Lana kills because she kills Dr. Lance. So that brings us to 4. We have a +3 for main character deaths because Lana, Lex, and Clark all die in this episode. They all come back, but they all die. They make it very clear that they're dead. That brings us to 11. We have a movie plot as an episode because, as we said, this is Flatliners. That brings us to 13. And we have 2 You Weren't Yourselves. Actually, we didn't mention that in the Lex and Lana scene, but he also tells Lana she apologized, and he says, "You weren't yourself." So we have that line, and then also the line earlier that Chloe says that Lana isn't exactly acting like herself. So that's 2 of those. That brings us to 23, which brings us to the Bechdel test, which we also established was a pass this week, Tyler.
It was, and I didn't hear them use Void episode name and title.
No, I was listening to it. I mean, obviously, this is one of those titles. I actually think this is a really clever title because Lana is trying to fill the void in her life or her heart with this, right? And also, like, they go into the afterlife, which is like this void, right? Because they're in like a purgatory state.
Yeah,
it's like how does the afterlife supposed to work in Smallville? Are these ghosts? Are they hanging around? Are these spirits? It's just but the near death thing. It's like this purgatory void environment, like what Clark was in. That's a void, right? So the best Smallville titles that they have dual meanings, even in their simplicity. So I think it's a good title, but hey, nobody says void. It'd be so Smallville though for Lana to like tell Lex, I guess Lex, I was just looking to fill this void I feel right now.
Or even Chloe being like, she's just filling the void of, you know, being like when she's giving Clark the speech about looking for the people, the only people who might love her, mm-hmm. her parents, you know, like she's trying to fill the void in her life. Yeah, it could have been slipped in there, but that's why I was listening for it. Like, okay.
Sure, it's here, but it's not. So, all right, Child Girl, always fun talking small with you. If people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you and your podcast?
So the best place to find me just at on Twitter at Krypton Report. You can find me on Facebook, JTY Patrick. You can find Krypton Report anywhere podcasts are and on Facebook as well. So check us out. We discuss all things Kryptonian. We discuss the ongoing Supergirl series. And in the fall, if we get the series, we'll discuss the upcoming Superman and Lois series. But we do reviews of anything with Superman and everything.
All righty. Well, as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. I'm also the host of Franchise Fatigue, a podcast about movie franchises, remakes, reboots, sequels, and when franchises get fatigued. You can find us on Twitter at UFP Earth. As for the podcast here, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville, and you can send us an email at AlwaysSmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, that's going to do it for us this week, but stay tuned next time when we talk about Fragile. And until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Dallas Hernandez, Cavante Chillis, Chris Fuchs, Casey Cochran, Tim Miller, Thomas Navin, Joe Mickendo, Steve Rogers, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Justin Maitner, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sacchi, Rachel Miller, Catherine Emmerich, Andrew Parker, James Lee, James Bandini II, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Corey Moore, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Catherine Caldwell, Kathleen Holland, Will Hunt, Nathan Rotacher, Clunk Kent, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Coso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Darren Kirch, Anthony Anderson, Joey Dimeberg, and Fres Horshey. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.